This is side two of the Randy Scott interview. We're talking about the graduate work at Columbia University, and you were working in the library.
Yeah. About the time I was ready to graduate at Columbia, this library was searching for a German cataloger, and I sent my resume, and instead of flying me in to interview, the director called me up and said, would you like to come back?
Uh-huh.
So that was that.
Who's the director then?
Richard Chapin.
Oh, Richard Chapin.
Chapin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in Columbia, at Columbia itself, my concentration was on cataloging and indexing,
mm-hmm.
Which is not what a lot of library people go to school for. It's more common to want to be an administrator or mm-hmm. a reference librarian.
Reference librarian. Uh-huh.
So I had an excellent teacher who had been the head of a major indexing service before she retired to teach a few classes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took all the state-of-the-art or up-to-the-minute cataloging courses, and we had guest lectures and tours, and it was really quite a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was all set when I came back to do a real special job on the comics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that worked, too.
Mm-hmm. Was the library organized when you got back here? Now they're in special collections. Did they have special collections back then?
Yes,
or
they were always
that
there.
That was a designation.
Right in this room was the reading room at that time.
So, and we're located in the MSU library right now.
Yes.
In special collections. Who was the director then? Did they have a separate?
The director.
Director of special,
head of
collections?
Special collections?
The head.
Mm-hmm. The head was Janet Fiore.
Okay.
And the major clerk and only other staff member was Ann Tracy, who's just retired.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose I have seniority right now. Although I didn't move down here right away. Of course, I said I was a German language cataloger, so I was up there
mm-hmm.
cataloging German books for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Not only German, but whatever else came along.
I see. Did you continue with the math, any of the science, cataloging of math, or was it just German books?
I did things in German, and there could have been some math books involved, but the idea back then, and still to some degree, is that the catalog department should have a breadth in languages that we can cover most of what
mm-hmm.
the faculty wants to read.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to sort of be able, German meant I had to handle Dutch and Danish too. But I didn't ever after do much with math except to figure out my statistics at the end of the month.
How was it that you ultimately came to special collections?
After Janet left the job of head of special collections and moved on to be an associate director of the library, she was the second in command, I think, mm-hmm. for a while. There was a big reorganization going on. This was under Director Hiram Davis.
Okay.
And I just pitched a proposal
mm-hmm.
to them saying, you know, Special Collections is not getting its cataloging done. And it's true, this place was always a little less priority because the stuff was paid for. And nobody was asking for it because nobody knew it was here. whereas the stuff upstairs that needed to be cataloged all had order records or had to be paid for and was, in a sense, more urgent
mm-hmm.
to the institution, more urgent. Not necessarily to the users because
mm-hmm.
when my proposal was accepted and, you know, there was negotiation. I expected to come down here as a cataloger and catalog all day, but it turns out I have to do everything too
mm-hmm.
that everybody else does. It turned out that once we started cataloging at a rapid rate, and something like 1,000 books a month sometimes we
wow.
were doing, which is unheard of
mm-hmm.
because in the meantime computers had arrived.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So there were two or three of us doing 1,000 books a month.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately our use went up.
Mm-hmm.
People discovered the stuff was here. And we were getting interlibrary loan requests, and we are to this day at a very rapid rate,
mm-hmm.
Dozens every day.
Are you seeing the effects of that, the computer catalogs increasing use or increasing dissemination?
I think so.
No?
It's undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that you had to read about it in a directory of special libraries to find out we had a comic book collection or
mm-hmm.
beekeeping collection. Now every single item is listed in our catalog and and in the National Library Catalogs, OCLC, and in many cases on our website. The random searches will find this stuff. So, yeah, it's made a big difference in accessibility, and we've had to run to keep up with providing what can be provided. There's our other job of being security people and not providing things that are going to fall apart.
Yeah, that's true. How in the mid 70s did Professor Nye continue to bring material to the his papers at that time?
Yes, he did.
Before his later illness.
Before he had the stroke, he was here constantly. After his retirement, I can't remember how many years that was. It wasn't a long time. But yeah, he was very present.
After you became head or working with the comics, what did you see with the what were your main job? Was it initially cataloging or organizing or?
Well, with the comics collection, I've always done everything basically. The theory that I work on, and for collecting other stuff, which I now have to do because we have so few staff, but is if you know what you have, if you can put your finger on a list and say, we have this, this, and this, but we're missing this, and that's what cataloging is, then you can do acquisitions intelligently. You can talk to donors and say, we need this, or you can buy it if it comes up for sale. So to me, the cataloging is the first step of collection building. And it's also my job to acquire all the comics.
I see.
And my job to answer all the reference questions.
How do you acquire them now, or what's the means?
Still, I would say the majority come through donations. I try to keep my feelers out among people who might be interested in donating things. I do have a fairly small, but a real budget now to buy things. It's paid up. It's gone for this year, but it'll be back in July.
So they never recovered that Spider-Man?
No.
Did you get a replacement for
it? No, we didn't.
You still don't?
That would not really be cost effective because we have it in a bound volume, and the people who need to read Spider-Man number one can read the facsimile. I'm sorry, this is not the kind of library we are. The purpose is democratic dissemination of information rather than building an elite collection. I just spent a week in the Dominican Republic visiting my daughter and bought 400 comics in the Spanish language.
Oh, really?
And this is what I like to do. I went to France twice last year and filled my backpacks. Went to Montreal. And
you find them in, so you're actively collecting.
Going to stores,
Going to stores and, and shows, is that still a, or not? Those
I don't do
pretty
that
much.
Called
over.
The shows exist. The prices tend to be high, and I would rather spend money on foreign comics that are not going to show up at the shows.
I see.
Because the collection is international. If I decide, or if some legitimate, or let's say, interesting user comes along and wants a copy of something that we don't have in English, I will try to buy it. Otherwise, I just beg.
You've obviously had some publications also related to your work as a bibliographer. Would you talk a little bit about that? How did you first publish something about cataloging comics and that sort of thing?
Yeah, my first quote unquote professional publication was in a journal out of Nevada, and it was about a technicality in the OCLC computer system. I was publishing a newsletter for all the people all around the country called Dead End Searches. And in that day of the computer, this was before I went to library school, there was a wall that you could come up against without expecting it, where your search would stop and it could waste you a lot of time. And I published a list of all those, so that if you had a suspicious search, you could check there first and decide not to do that. But, and that several hundred copies went to libraries all around the country, and they were all very appreciative of it. So I wrote up an article and had it accepted in the little journal. And why I say quote unquote professional is because I wasn't professional yet; I was still a typist. But that was fun, and through that I made some friends in the library world. Specifically one Sanford Berman from the Hennepin County Library in Minneapolis.
Minneapolis.
And he's been a good friend ever since. He sends me care packages on anything about comics or radicalism every couple of days. He's retired and he's still sending care packages.
How you're responsible for the radical collection also?
Right now, yes. I'm the selector and the cataloger.
Okay. All right. How would you describe, or how did the collection first get started?
That is a little lost in antiquity. We did get the SDS office and the paper office when they closed.
Okay.
All the stuff came over here. And that was exchange copies of underground papers from all over the country and leaflets, this kind of stuff. We didn't get any kind of membership lists or anything like the police would get. But we got all
the leaflets. Were interested in. And a lot of it must have been mimeographed
cheap offset printing done by shopping guys and stuff. And on the cheap acid paper, cheapest newsprint that could be afforded at the time. So we have a fairly massive collection, starting from around all these things started in 70, 71 or something like that. And it's a fairly comprehensive collection of the new left kind of radical leaflets and papers. We didn't get so much from the Black Liberation Movement or the Women's Liberation Movement, although there's some pretty good stuff. And so my colleague Ann Tracy, I said, just retired, but she was active in soliciting things from especially the Women's Liberation Movement and the Gay Liberation Movement. And I would have to say that Ann Tracy and Janet built the Radicalism Collection. Apparently, I've been hearing lately that Beth Shapiro was involved somehow in creating the collection. I kind of suspect maybe it was encouragement that she gave mostly, but I really don't know.
Did you know Beth well?
Not very well, no. She was a couple years older, and when SDS split, she went into the farthest away one from me.
But she was working at the library,
yes,
too, here.
Yes. Quite a few years before I was, and
in your work as a reference librarian in popular culture, you got involved in that also. How would you say that? But that obviously was through Professor Nye's collections that he did. Did the university expand its interest in popular culture at that time, or?
Yes, Ann and Jeanette and Dick Chapin, director, when this all started, he wasn't pushing popular culture, but he was not prejudiced against it, which was a positive thing in those days.
Yes, or many academic archives and libraries would actively would not seek it out.
So actually his tenure was fairly friendly to what we were doing down here, or what they were doing. And they had quite a bit of leeway to try to occasionally buy things, and accept donations from other organizations and free subscriptions from different organizations. And so the collection has, both of the collections, Radicalism and Popular Culture, have grown steadily over the last 30 years. But about 10 years ago, we got together with Ohio State and Kent State and Bowling Green, the four universities, and formed a consortium of popular culture libraries in the Midwest. I may have missed a word there. We spent a lot of time trying to think of a reasonable name. And we sort of divided up popular culture. A couple of the MSU emphases were comic books and Sunday school literature. Ohio State got comic strips, mm-hmm. and papers of cartoonists and cartooning organizations. So they call themselves, they are the Cartoon Research Library, we are the Comic Art Collection. And there's overlap, obviously, but mm-hmm. sometimes it's reasonable to send donors or researchers back and forth from one to the other. Mm-hmm. If somebody offers me the papers of a cartoonist, I try to shunt them over to Ohio State, and they will send us people giving away comic books. Mm-hmm. So that works great. Bowling Green keeps a small collection, a representative collection of comic books. And we went right down the line and tried to divide things up. Ohio State has most of the fiction novels. Bowling Green is collecting in movies, sound recordings, and popular things in those areas. Mm-hmm. And there's a leaflet around here somewhere.
I see. Was science fiction here?
Science fiction.
Or?
No.
No.
Science fiction is mainly at Ohio State.
Okay.
Now, we still have one, I did a directory, one of the 20 best science fiction collections, mm-hmm. because that was one thing. Apparently, we spent some money on some old pulps. Mm-hmm. And I helped broker a purchase of 1,700 paperback novels one time when, when I was working upstairs. Mm-hmm. And so we have a fairly good science fiction collection, but we spend essentially no money on it. Mm-hmm. And that's by decision. None of these fiction collections do we spend money on except Sunday school.
Oh, that's interesting. Is there much demand, or has there been much demand in that?
Now that it's cataloged.
And people are finding it.
People are finding it. But yes, we've gotten a grant, and it's just finishing up now to scan a lot of these Sunday school books onto the web. Mm-hmm. Professor Steve Reckman has been one of the supervisors of that grant. Mm-hmm. And we did it in cooperation with Central Michigan. Mm-hmm. And so they sent a bunch of their books down here, and we got them all scanned up, and I assume we sent them back. Because they've always been known for their Sunday school book collection up there.
Is that in the Clark Library, or was it just in the regular?
No, it's in a special collection.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the Sunday school books are something that other people in that consortium hadn't thought of. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons we decided to go for it. Mm-hmm. And especially since Ann Tracy was really, really into them, mm-hmm. and knew a lot about them.
I see.
We capitalized on that.
Mm-hmm. The library and library work, obviously, if you were involved in computers even before you became a librarian, how would you say the impact of the computer has been on the business of librarianship?
I would guess it's changed librarianship more than it's changed a lot of occupations. Mm-hmm. We've all had to learn about and early about searching things on the web and using databases in different forms that change every couple of years, sometimes radically. And as providers of content for these big databases, we take a book and put it up for the first time for anybody to realize it exists. That's very satisfying. It used to be that you would type a card, have it reproduced and put in the card catalog and send one copy off to Washington, where they would collate it into the National Union catalog, mm-hmm. and then ultimately print it into a book that would be distributed, we're talking 15 years here, to the other libraries, where somebody would see, oh, there's a book on that.
Mm-hmm. At
Michigan
location.
State University. Mm-hmm. That happens, that when I started as a cataloger, one book an hour was what was desired. Mm. That I should produce that. Mm-hmm. And
not 1,200 a month.
And now, if I'm doing the hard ones, I can still do 10 an hour. Because the intellectual work is still there, but the routine is gone. Mm-hmm. I can knock them off. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm working on the Italian Risorgimento, which...
Garibaldi and all
that. Yeah, those guys. We got a grant to do some microfilming for our collection, which has been sitting back here uncatalogued for years.
Yeah.
And the cataloger that they wrote into the grant has since died.
Oh.
It fell in my lap. So I'm brushing up on my 19th century Italian history. I use a dictionary for the Italian. But mm-hmm. No, actually, I read a lot of comics in Italian. It's 5-6 years ago, we bought a collection of European comics that's without peer, without equal.
Oh, really?
We bought 11,000 all at once.
Uh-huh. Was that from a private donor? Or not a donor, but a private?
From a publisher who was in legal trouble in Stockholm. I needed some quick cash.
I see.
And we followed the shipping news and watched the boat as it came over. That was pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in all European languages, except very few Finnish or Hungarian, but mm-hmm. basically the Germanic and the Romance languages. And we cataloged them all. And I spent a lot of time working on a website about those. And I've been meeting people from these different countries. And I've been to France to a festival where I met a lot of the people I've been corresponding with. Mm-hmm. And it's been really fun, you know, using all the linguistics and stuff that I did as an undergrad.
Yeah. So so that preparation did help, or ultimately?
I'll be darned, you know. So we have an international collection that's internationally known and fairly solid in the works of all these several literatures.
Mm-hmm.
I just finished writing a book Thursday before last, and mailed it off just before we left for our vacation on European comics in English translation.
Oh.
And when I got back, the publisher said they like it. They want some revision to the introduction, but mm-hmm. heck, I can do that standing on my head.
Yeah, you got the acceptance letter. That's the key. What in some of the other things that you published? What are some of the more recent things that you've worked on?
Oh, the last thing I published, not on the web, was in a magazine called the Serials Review, which is for serials librarians studying their profession. That's a sort of a loose category, a serials librarian, but mm-hmm. it's somebody who works with periodicals, and the editor thought comic books, okay, periodicals, mm-hmm. give them an article. So I wrote an article about our collection, which went over well. Before that, I did a book that was a catalog of our collection, published with Greenwood. Mm-hmm. It was like a 1,400-page book.
Oh, wow.
And I typed it all myself because they couldn't read my discs.
Oh, really?
I had to set up all the pages, mm-hmm. put all the page numbers on it. And before that, I did a book called Comics Librarianship, mm-hmm. which is basically for new librarians in library schools. And I get emails every month about people from people who are reading it.
Uh-huh. So it's
still being used. It's not, it's out of print, but mm-hmm. apparently the library schools each bought a copy. So. That takes us back to the late 80s, mm-hmm. Or about 1990. And before that, I did a book called Comic Books and Strips, mm-hmm. an information source book. Mm-hmm. It was just a bibliography of everything about comics that had been written in English, mm-hmm. which hadn't been done before. It hasn't been done since. There should be another edition.
Have collectors been receptive to the books that you worked on, in addition to the, or have they used them, or has it mostly been librarians?
Mostly librarians. I've been cited in a few other books about comics,
mm-hmm.
But the people who write outside of academia on comics tend to have their own sources.
Mm-hmm.
They're friends.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And so there is a two-world thing going on between the fandom, mm-hmm. as we call it, and people who are working in university jobs and trying to publish our parish.
Mm-hmm. In looking at the library, the Michigan State Library, you've obviously had both as a student and also your work experience here. Would you talk a little bit about the automation changes that you've seen here at the university, at the library at MSU?
Well, the basic thing is the switch from cards to a computer catalog. And I was deeply involved in the cards as a librarian, because even though computers had sneaked in for cataloging purposes about the time I went to library school, the card catalog was still alive and well.
Mm-hmm.
And we were producing cards by computer. That seems kind of funny now, but nobody ever imagined that we could afford enough terminals to put them out anywhere. You know, mm-hmm. The idea that a personal computer could be a terminal in your own house, this was radical. Mm-hmm. So I was the last filing trainer. I was the person who trained all new employees to file correctly into the card catalog. Mm-hmm. They would all be required to go out an hour a day and put cards in and put little flags after them. And I would have to come back after them and check every one that they put in to make sure that they understood what was going on. Mm-hmm. And after a few weeks, you know, I could say, okay, you're good enough. But that was really, really labor intensive for everybody involved. But the cataloger, the head cataloger at that time, believed that it was important that the catalogers had their fingers in the catalog and were seeing. His theory was that you had to sort of live in the catalog in order to produce something sensible, mm-hmm. Rather than just doing it by rote and throwing it in. Mm-hmm. And that was an important lesson for me, that it's been very hard to try to transfer to the new kind of cataloging, mm-hmm. The new computer systems, because for one thing, there's no filing. Everything files itself.
Right, that's true.
Which is a good thing, but sometimes it doesn't quite make sense. Mm-hmm. And you've got to keep watching for ways to make things easier for people. So the attitude, the desired attitude, as far as I'm concerned, hasn't changed. You know, try to make sure that this makes sense, not only on the one card level or the one screen level, but on the index screens and as things relate to each other. That is the professional part of catalog, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. And that's been hard to work through with. The catalog is sort of now in the hands of systems people who don't remember the cards, you mm-hmm. know, because they were educated after the cards, mm-hmm. which is fine, but the fixes that they make are not what an old-fashioned cataloger would make. And so if a French title starts with the letter A, mm-hmm. yeah, that's an A in English and you disregard it, right? Mm-hmm. Well, so they have the computer set up to disregard all ahs at mm-hmm. the beginning, so you can't find the French title unless you happen to guess that they decided that was an article. Mm-hmm. Type it in. Well, that's the kind of thing that I still enjoy struggling with.
The detail. The students that we see now coming in, how do you see any difference from that back in 1965 when you came down from the Alpena area?
I don't think so. I mean, I wouldn't. If there is a difference, I wouldn't be able to put my finger on it. You know, except as in general, things have progressed, and these kids are computer literate, and I don't really know from listening to Lynn talk. Mm-hmm. Lynn's my wife, who teaches at ATL. Even though they should be connected through the media and through their computers with the world and know a lot more than we did, they don't.
No change. Had you been involved in any of the political activism since the early 70s on campus? Or
no, very, very little. I was sort of an observer at it for an organization called the CIA, Crisis in America, that a lot of my friends were in. And I was involved in the unionization drive for the faculty one time.
And with the faculty associates, or was it for the...
Faculty associates, okay. Yeah. And when the CTs went out on strike, I didn't go out with them because I would have lost my job, but I spent all my extra time on the picket line with them. I played the accordion for the CTs. There were a lot of different picket lines because I had just finished being a CT at that time.
And that was before you became on a professional level?
No, I was a professional at that time.
Okay.
Yeah, so I moved from the CTs to Columbia University and back to the professional.
I see. Mm-hmm. How, you mentioned your accordion, your music. How has music affected your life in the When did you first get interested in music?
Oh, my parents gave me piano lessons,
mm-hmm.
and I'm glad they did, and I did it to all my kids, and I hope they're someday glad. But yeah, music was always a part of growing up. My dad was the Sunday school song leader, and my mom was the assistant organist. And when I came down here, one of the first things I did was, along with math and German, I took music theory, because the whole idea that music had a theory was of interest. And I took the first year of music theory and enjoyed it thoroughly, though I can't say I ever applied it to anything. And I sort of dropped music for a long time. And then about 10 years ago, I discovered jazz and bought a stand-up bass fiddle from Janet Fiore's son. And now every week we have a little jam session here in the library.
Right in the library.
Right here. You see the piano? That's Maury's old Wurlitzer electric piano there. That's an accordion. There's two guitars.
Mm-hmm. Who else is in your group? Besides, you mentioned Maury Crane.
Maury Crane and Dondi Porter is an accordion player, mm-hmm. who was at one time a professional accordion player, but now works in the library. And occasionally we've had a guitar player, in which case I play the bass. I've been playing guitar lately.
Mm-hmm. Have you had any gigs outside the library? Or
there were 3 years in a row when we played for the state library downtown.
Oh, oh really?
They had some kind of an open house day. Can't remember the exact name.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we'd play for a couple hours then to cheer people up. They like that. And we played for a few teas, I think. We played for something at Brody Hall, I think, if I remember right.